Well, little children, I think we're ready to do our study for today. It's March 28th. I can hardly read it. Normally I can read this very easily. This monitor, the M1 Max MacBook Pro integrated monitor, the self-contained or integrated screen in the laptop. I've been reading it very easily recently, but maybe it's because I'm blinded by the brightness of my illumination here. But it's March 28th, and the time is 1921 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green here. I'm very pleased to share with you today's study, little children, and maybe a few other things also. Let's get the study out of the way. Wild Road Ahead to History, Part 1, Paragraph 5-3, or that is, the designation of the paragraph is according to the chapter number followed by the paragraph, which is 5-3 because it's Chapter 5, Paragraph 3. And here we read, any major discrepancy for the date of the astronomical records in the work Observations of Bell, which we know was a work of the Akkadians, with the date of Sargon's reign, if it is a discrepancy, may be explained by Sayce as follows. Sayce is a scientist or a person who has studied these things. The Akkadians seem to have begun their astronomical observations before they left Elam, since the meridian was placed in that country, while the old mythology made the mountain of the east the pivot on which the sky rested. This will account for the large number of eclipses recorded in the Observations of Bell, which imply a corresponding antiquity for the commencement of such records. These records were carefully kept, as there were state observatories in most of the Babylonian and Assyrian towns at Ur, Agand, which is also Akkad, Nineveh, Arbela, for instance, and at all events in later times, the astronomers royal had to send fortnightly reports to the king. That means every 2 weeks. It is to the Akkadians that we owe both the signs of the zodiac and the days of the week. Long before the reign of Sargon of Agane, or Akkad, the discovery had been made that lunar eclipses recur after a cycle of 223 lunations, and records of them incorporated into the Observations of Bell generally begin with the words, according to calculation, or, it may be, contrary to calculation, the moon was eclipsed. This is from the journal called Nature, which is a very famous scientific journal. Einstein published in the journal called Nature also. And this is volume 12, an article edited by Sir Norman Lockyer called The Astronomy of the Babylonians, written by A.H. Sayce. It was dated 1875, this particular article. Thus, science was established well before the time even of Abram of the Bible, and the testimony now obtained regarding Abraham's own visit to Egypt cannot be lessened based on that lack of a scientific culture which prevailed at the time and prevented an accurate, objective record of events, such as was here recorded. So we see that even though there appears to have been somewhat of a scientific culture during the dynasty of Akkad, it didn't prevail throughout the whole culture of all people, of course. And so it's not evident from the general testimony of the people of that time that there was a scientific culture. But in fact there wasn't a general, I mean, science is never generally among the populace as a whole. It's not generally the mainstream. It's not, you know, it's not generally a popular thing, science. I mean, there's such a thing as popular science, but science is very restrictive, or it's a very narrow discipline. Only a few people out of the main population are involved in science. Relatively speaking, it's a small number of people. So just because there's no scientific culture, that does not lessen, or, you know, I mean, popular culture. It's just, it's hard to say what, when I wrote this, I was very deeply involved in the research of this, and the main point I'm making here is that there was science. There was science in the astronomy of the Akkadians, even before Abraham, well before Abraham. But it's not always clear when we look at, you know, a document that is not containing a lot of science, right? If it's just a book, like even the Bible, for example, doesn't contain a lot of science, or hardly any. But it, because it's an account of history, it's not, and it's a family record. And a document that records events. It's not a scientific document. So, I mean, just because there's no general, you know, science among the people as a whole, that doesn't mean that there wasn't science at the time. And we can't lessen the fact that when Abraham visited Egypt, for example, he may have been involved in science with the astronomers and things like that. We don't know much. I think that's what I'm talking about there, but it's hard to say what I was thinking exactly when I wrote that. Whatever we know about Abraham visiting Egypt, we don't have to worry about whether there was science in Egypt, because apparently a lot of people knew about science because it was a part of certain cultures like the Akkadians, for example. So this is really strong evidence for scientific knowledge. It doesn't mean they were good people at all. It just means that they had scientific knowledge. But about the heavens in this case. But the other thing is, this statement by Mr. Sayce, by A.H. Sayce, about the Akkadians having begun their astronomical observations before they left Elam, and that accounts for the large number of eclipses. Well, he doesn't talk about how many eclipses there were, or how far back they date, you know, to what date they go back, you know, in terms of BCE years or anything. He doesn't give us any indication that would help us with the chronology there. It's not clear. And when we looked at the chronology, we didn't see that. We did not see that. We saw that it looked like the astronomical records didn't begin until after the Akkadians had moved to the area of Babylon, in fact. And into Mesopotamia, where they were at the time of Abraham, and later on from that earlier time of about 2302 BCE down until 2141 BCE. During that time period, they appear to have been located in that fertile crescent of Mesopotamia between the river the Euphrates and some of the other rivers in that area. But it's not it's not a definite statement here about the actual antiquity of these records. So we can't really draw chronological conclusions from this statement of Mr. Sace, A.H. Sace, which is unfortunate, unless we get some more information, because we've already seen that the date of Sargon's year one is 2302 in the Blessed Genealogy, and then it's about 70, 68, what is it? 68 years later? Right, it would be 66 plus 2. 68 years later is when it looks like these astronomical records began, in 2234 BCE. So it was after they arrived, not before they arrived in Babylon. So to say that they began these records went before they moved to Babylon, when they were still in Elam, we don't see any evidence of that in our chronology. So I don't know why the statement was made by Mr. Sace, by Mr. A.H. Sace, in his article, because he doesn't give the actual dating of these records that he's talking about. But it's, we still, we're being honest and we're acknowledging what he said. So we need to keep track of what was being said by different experts, so that later on, if we learn something new, we can then apply what he said in a new way. That's why we like to read these things and study them and quote them and write them down. So, the main proof here is, or the main point that I wanted to take from this, and that's why I wrote it down, was that science was established at this time. There was science established, and they were studying the heavens at this time. Now, we don't need to believe that they began their measurements when they were still in Elam, but the reason why A.H. Sace also mentioned that they were, he thought, beginning these measurements prior to their movement to Babylon, while they were still in Elam, is because they used the meridian. In other words, the meridian would be a number of location, right? A locating number for their measurements. And he said this meridian that he's mentioning, the meridian was placed in that country. The meridian, it's hard to say meridian three times quickly. The meridian was placed in that country, while the mountain of the east was also the pivot on which the sky rested. That made him think that they'd begun their measurements in that other country, but that's not necessarily proven, is it? And he didn't give an actual number for the date in which these measurements began, so he doesn't prove his point at all. So we can take his point with a large grain of salt, and we can stick to our own chronology, which is what we should always do when we have evidence that is so good as what we have. We have excellent evidence for the genealogy here. We don't need to change it, and that's very hard to do sometimes when we find a very interesting piece of testimony from an expert. It's sometimes very hard to stick to our belief and say, no, we're correct, or we're going to stick with our chronology because all the other evidence is still in favor of the genealogical dates, with Abraham being born in 2206 BCE, the Akkadian dynasty beginning in 2302 BCE with Sargon the First, or Sargon the Great, and with his year one in 2302. So that's it. Let's move on before we get too bogged down with that. Genesis chapter 28. Now look what happened after Jacob had tricked his father into giving him the blessing that belonged to Esau. Although we know that Esau had sold his birthright to his brother, so Jacob owned the birthright, but the thing was, Jacob did deceive his father. Consequently, Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and commanded him and said to him, "You must not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Get up, go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, the father of your mother, and from there take yourself a wife from the daughters of Laban, the brother of your mother. And God Almighty will bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, and you will certainly become a congregation of peoples. And he will give to you the blessing of Abraham, to you and to your seed with you, that you may take possession of the land of your alien residences, which God has given to Abraham." So Isaac sent Jacob away, and he struck out for Paddan Aram, for Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, mother of Jacob and Esau. When Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and had sent him away to Paddan Aram to take from there a wife for himself, and that when he blessed him, he laid the command upon him, saying, "Do not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan," and that Jacob was obeying his father and his mother and was on his way to Paddan Aram, then Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan were displeasing in the eyes of Isaac his father. Hence Esau went to Ishmael and took as wife Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, the son of Abraham, the sister of Nebaioth, besides his other wives. And Jacob continued on his way out from Beersheba and kept going to Haran. In time he came across a place and set about spending the night there because the sun had set. So he took one of the stones of the place and set it as his head supporter and lay down in that place. And he began to dream, and look, there was a ladder stationed upon the earth and its top reaching up to the heavens. And look, there were God's angels ascending and descending on it. And look, there was Jehovah stationed above it. And he proceeded to say, "I am Jehovah, the God of Abraham your father, and the God of Isaac. The land upon which you are lying, to you I am going to give it, and to your seed. And your seed will certainly become like the dust particles of the earth, and you will certainly spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And by means of you, and by means of your seed, all the families of the ground will certainly bless themselves. And here I am with you, and I will keep you in all the way you are going, and I will return you to this ground, because I am not going to leave you until I have actually done what I have spoken to you." Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Truly Jehovah is in this place, and I myself did not know it." And he grew fearful and added, "How fear-inspiring this place is! This is nothing else but the house of God, and this is the gate of the heavens." So Jacob got up early in the morning and took the stone that was there as his head supporter, and he set it up as a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. Further, he called the name of that place Bethel. But the fact is, Luz was the city's name formerly. And Jacob went on to vow a vow, saying, "If God will continue with me and will certainly keep me on this way on which I am going, and will certainly give me bread to eat and garments to wear, and I shall certainly return in peace to the house of my father, then Jehovah will have proved to be my God, and this stone that I have set up as a pillar will become a house of God. And as for everything that you will give me, I shall without fail give the tenth of it to you." That was Genesis chapter 28. quite remarkable events. And we see that once again Jehovah repeats the promise that he gave to Abraham and then to Isaac and to Jacob. Now he's repeating it about the fact that all the families of the ground would bless themselves and will bless themselves because of the seed of Jacob, as he said and promised also to Abraham and to Isaac. But also the land was to be given to Jacob and to his seed, as he had promised to Abraham and to Isaac in turn. And we saw what happened with Esau, that he realized that his parents were not pleased about his Hittite wives, and that Jacob was going to Paddan Aram to take a wife from the family of Rebekah, because that pleased his parents far more than taking wives from the peoples of the land of Canaan. Because of that, Esau went and took a wife for himself from the daughters of Ishmael. So Esau learned something about what happened when Jacob was sent off to Paddan Aram. Now Paddan Aram is, of course, this place, it's to the east of the Promised Land. It's the same place. See where we can find that. Go to Paddan Aram. Where was Paddan Aram? Paddan Aram, wasn't it? I'm trying to think if that was up near Haran or whether it was more to the east. Let's see if we can find an insight book on the an insight reference to this. What's that? See what we can do here. Let's see. Is that any? Wait. I want to look up the insight book if I can here. Let's see. I don't know. I don't know if I can do that from this. Let's try something else. Okay. Let's look at something else. Go to the multi-translation, go to the study Bible, and then look at, it's the same thing, I think, the research guide, there we go. Well, that's the Watchtower again, right. I'm looking for the insight book. Here's All Scripture Inspired, let's see. Oh yeah, it's not available in my app. I have that book, but it's not available here in this app unless I download it. Okay, so there's something about Paddan Aram. Where's Paddan Aram? I'm going to Google it. But we're done the study for today. I'm going to come back here. Let's just do that. Let's make a new... I better do it offline here. Or over, off screen here. There it is. Okay. Where is it? It's near Haran. Yeah. So it's the place from which Abraham had originally moved when he moved away from Haran. It's that area. Makes sense. So it's not all the way back as far as to the east, where the as far east as Ur or Babylon, but it's at least that's what I'm finding out here. Let's see if we can find out more. Yeah, in the Bible. Let's see. insight on the scriptures. Okay. Here we have it. Good. Okay. We've got something. I can see if I can drop that down. There it is. Okay. It's around the city of Haran, according to the insight books. So we're done our study for today. That was very, I don't know what to say. It's always something going on when we study the Bible. There's always new things that we learn, even if we've read it before. It's always illuminating. It always brings us into a state of knowing that we have people who love us, or that brings us into the family of Jehovah's people, because it's a record of people who are nowadays, even though they may not be genetically close to us, perhaps they are, but they're spiritually our family, because Christians, once we learn about Jesus, we become part of spiritual Israel, and spiritual Israel is, of course, the spiritual part, or the spiritual corresponding part of what was originally literal Israel. It's become spiritual Israel in the sense of that we don't have to be Jewish in order to believe in Jesus. Quite the contrary, in fact. We can be any nation, from any nation at all, and we're still part of spiritual Israel. Although the true, of course, the real, the anointed are the real spiritual Israel. But all of us are part of spiritual Israel, just like Jesus said, I have other sheep. I have other sheep which are not of this fold. Even though we may not feel like we're part of spiritual Israel, we still feel like we have a family, and that spiritual Israel is that family that we feel close to, that we can be a part of, that we can get love from. We can feel love coming from spiritual Israel today, even though not always from literal Israel necessarily, but see, because literal Israel was God's people, but it was replaced with spiritual Israel, who are God's people after the time of Jesus. So this is it. Paddan Aram was near Haran. I want to show you something. This is my watch that I purchased on the top left. That's the watch that I bought 50 years ago. Now, I can't show you the actual watch and get as good a picture. It's a far better way to do it is just to get a picture from online. So I searched for my watch and I found it. I found this picture. This is exactly what my watch looks like. And it's far more attractive to look at an image that was put online using apparently a good camera. But I mean, it's easier to do that than to take an actual picture of my watch, which is also not in as good a condition as this watch. This is the same watch, but it's in mint condition, whereas my watch would have scratches and damage. It's missing some of the buttons and so on. But that's my watch. It's a Waltham 17 jewel. I think it's called an Inablock chronograph, but I didn't remember that part of it. But it's a chronograph, certainly, stopwatch function built in, and that's what I've used. Well, I used it for a few years before these buttons fell off and it broke and stopped working as far as the chronograph went. And now the main spring, the main timekeeping part is also stopped working. For whatever reason, it's either slipping, either the mainspring is worn out, or it's slipping and not staying wound up or something. So that was my old watch. Now I've replaced it. The first watch I bought was this one here, the one on the bottom right. and it's not got any chronograph feature, and it's gained about 5 seconds so far in less than 24 hours, so it gains about 7 seconds every day, possibly. We'll have to keep monitoring. But this watch I received about 24 hours ago, that when I started using it, was about 24 hours. Well, it's 6 hours less, or 5 hours less than 24 hours ago now, but it's approaching 24 hours of use for this watch, right? And that is this watch right here, right? It won't look as good on camera as you can see it on the screen there, but it's the Live Saturn V Moondust watch, containing a Swiss movement called the SW200-1, which is a nice, very fine Swiss movement for a watch. It's using the Elaboré grade of that particular movement, which is elaborated. In other words, they're slightly higher quality than standard. And it's supposed to be 5 seconds per day, but I think the actual elaborate grade is 7 seconds per day accuracy. Even though they quoted 5, I'm not getting 5 per day currently, because I've already gained 5 seconds already, and it's not 24 hours. So we'll see what happens with that as time goes on, but 5 seconds a day is not bad. It's very good, in fact, or 7 seconds a day. I mean, 7 seconds a day is not bad. I mean, this Waltham was losing 2 minutes a day, almost. And when a watch is given a rating as a chronometer, when it's certified, it cannot lose more than a certain amount of time. There's no way that losing 2 minutes a day is acceptable as a timekeeping instrument for very accurate measurements. So, but I mean, even though I was perfectly happy with this watch, as long as it would keep working, I could keep resetting it every day. That was no real problem. But now I won't have to reset my watch as often, because I'm running, for example, one of the watches I'm running is this Live Saturn V Moondust with the blue dial, which is beautiful. It's very beautiful. It has a date function too. It displays the date in the bottom. See that? So, and it's Swiss. The movement is the Solita SW200-1. Beautiful movement. I mean, it's not a Valjoux or an ETA movement, an ETA, which is the same as Valjoux nowadays. But this watch here, I received this watch today. It's a much more expensive watch than this Live watch. They're both Swiss. This one contains a movement based on the Valjoux 7750, which is a very famous chronograph movement, but it's actually the H-21 movement, which is made by Hamilton, and it contains a silicon mainspring, which is incredible. It's supposed to give greater accuracy. It's a very, very new technology not for the mainspring. I correct myself. It's the hairspring. It's the balance spring, or the hairspring. It's made of silicon, which is more accurate, so they say. And it's very new. It's a very new technology. And it's also been certified as a chronometer. But it's not clear what accuracy I'm getting, because I just started it today. I just started using it a few hours ago now. It's not been long enough. But this is called the Crosswind chronograph by Hamilton. And it's got a day and a date on it. They're both self-winding. They're both self-winding, which means they're called automatic, which means self-winding, as many Swiss movements are, but not all Swiss movements. But this is my new watch to replace the chronometer that I had 50 years ago. This is a chronometer made by Hamilton, And you can see, we can see the comparison in the picture here too. You see, it looks better in the picture. You can see more detail than you can on the cam here. But it's the same identical watch as you see in the picture here to the bottom left. The bottom left is this exact watch, Hamilton Crosswind. It's a lefty, which means that the button for setting the time is on the left, because these two buttons on the right are for calculating crosswind if you're a pilot. I just liked the watch, and I shopped for a lot of watches, and eventually I came back and said, no, this is the watch I want. And if you look at it, it looks more similar to the original Waltham that I owned 50 years ago. So I wanted to replace that watch, so I decided I was going to replace that Waltham with this Hamilton. And it's big. It's 44 millimeters, actually. 44 millimeters in diameter, which is bigger. My old watch is 38 millimeters. This is 44 millimeters. So, you know, compared to my wrist, let me put it on my wrist. So it's like, yeah, it's basically as wide as my wrist, if you consider the lugs. It's wide. It's a lefty. And we'll see what accuracy it gets. I don't know yet. But it's got a chronometer. I mean, it's also got a chronograph. It's the chronometer just means that it's specified to have a certain accuracy. It's a chronograph, which means it's a stopwatch built in, just like my old Waltham was. And this is a 12-hour stopwatch. Okay, 12 hours, just like my old Waltham. That's what I wanted to get, was one that replaced it with another equivalent stopwatch, which is 12-hour stopwatch, which is what the Valjoux 7750 is. And the Hamilton version of the Valjoux 7750 is the H-21. In this case, it's some of the older Hamilton watches use the actual Valjoux 7750 movement, but this one, it has an updated movement, which has got the silicon hairspring, and it's also rotated so that the position of the 12-hour clock, which is up in the top here, is different from where it was on the older movements. They've rotated it to be in a different location. Now the seconds hand for the watch is right here. This is the running second hand on the right at the 3 o'clock position, and the stopwatch 12-hour clock is at the 12-hour dial is at 12 o'clock, and the 30-minute stopwatch dial is at 6 o'clock, and the date at 9 o'clock, as you can see. It weighs quite a bit too. It's pretty heavy. We'll see how this one goes in terms of how I like to use it. But these have sapphire lenses on them. Both of these watches are sapphire, synthetic sapphire lenses, which is scratch resistant, but it's not the most durable lens. If you smash it hard enough, it will break. Sapphire will actually shatter, but it's scratch resistant. So if I bought some other watch that didn't have sapphire, I could have got a watch that had a more durable, you know, smash resistant material instead of sapphire. But I shopped for a lot of different watches, and I wasn't really that concerned about getting sapphire. It's just that a lot of the best watches do have sapphire for their lens material. And these are not the best or most expensive watches either. They're not inexpensive watches, and they're Swiss watches, which they have Swiss movements in them, which make them highly desirable. And they're mechanical watches. They're not quartz, right? They're self-winding, automatic. You can wind them by hand, but they're also self-winding. And that means in the back of them, as you can even see probably, in some cases you will be able to see it, that you see it moves around. The rotor moves when I move the watch. There's a rotor that rotates as I move the watch around. that rotor is what winds the watch. So as I move my wrist, this rotor will rotate. There it is. You can see it rotating. Yeah, jiggling. That rotor jiggles, but it rotates in both directions, and no matter which way the rotor moves, it winds the watch in a positive way, no matter which way it moves. And the other one, that's the chronograph. See, that's the chronograph. Has that has the visible movement. You can see the movement running in the back, and there it is on the front, which I already showed you, and which you're seeing on the screen too, on the lower left. And then on the lower right, this is the Live Saturn V Moondust. It's such a beautiful dial. The color of this dial is just spectacular. And on the back, it's fully open. The reason why the crosswind was not fully open on the back was because, and it's got a similar rotor. I think it might be fully wound, and that's why the rotor doesn't want to move around much right now. I'm not sure if it's because it's already wound up or what, but is the rotor even moving? I know it moves. It does move if I shake it, but I don't know if you'll be able to see that. Let's see. Oh yeah, it moves, but it's not moving as easily as it was when I first got it. And I'm thinking that's because, oh yeah, it's on a ball bearing. The rotor is on a ball bearing on this particular watch. I'm not sure what the Hamilton one is, but this Live watch has a ball bearing mounted rotor, and it's fully open at the back because the crosswind watch by Hamilton needs to have a calculator on the back of it. They put this chart on the back. It takes up half of the space on the back of the watch. It's for a chart, so you can use the chart on the back to calculate your compensation for the crosswind. If you're a pilot, you need this information on the back. Anyway, I don't know if I'm ever going to fly a plane or a helicopter, but some people use that function. Of course, nowadays it's not that common to use a watch for calculating anything because you've got so many other electronic devices. You don't need your watch for that, but it's a mechanical way of doing it that you can use as a backup if your electronic devices didn't work for some reason. You know, if you needed a way to calculate crosswind compensation, you can do that with that watch. So I just like the watch as a general timepiece with the chronograph, and I looked through a lot of different watches. I shopped for a lot of hours, many hours, before I eventually came back to one that I saw very early on, which was this one, this Hamilton, which I really love. So it's my replacement for my 50-year-old watch, and this is, I guess, it just time marches on. It's been 50 years, and I want to have I decided I'm going to have more than one watch. This was the first watch I purchased, was the Live. And then I decided, well, couldn't resist buying the watch that I really wanted more than any other, which was the Hamilton. So that's what I did. But this is not the end of the story. I think we'll continue this story on another day. So it is March 28th, 2023. It's 20:05. Hours, 2005 hours, 2005 Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green saying bye for now. I love you and have a wonderful day. I hope you've enjoyed the study. Praise God and may God bless you. And may you understand the love of Jesus, the anointed messenger of God, Jehovah. Bye for now.